This is what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. Let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied, unburdened with duties, and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm, and wise and skillful, not proud and demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest thing that the wise would later reprove, wishing in gladness and in safety, may all beings be happy. Whatever living beings there may be, whether they are weak or strong, omitting none, the great or the mighty, medium, short or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born, may all beings be happy. Let none deceive another or despise any being in any state. Let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another. Even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child, so with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings, radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, outwards and unbounded, free from hatred and ill will, wishing whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, free from drowsiness, one should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sublime abiding, by not holding to fixed views, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being freed from all sense desires, is not born again into this world. Okay, so I'll make a start with the meditation-based talk, small talk. So I was just thinking about, you know, just a talking point as I was walking up from the back of the monastery there. And one thing, just a little point which came to mind is like one's quality of life. You know, how does meditation, you know, we can see the most obvious things with meditation. People want some peace of mind, you know, increased mindfulness in daily life. They want greater resistance to stress or protection, you know, from anger and irritation. And it could be many other sort of numerous qualities that one can develop with the practice, but something which came to mind was, you know, when you look at in a nutshell, the overall assessment is increasing the quality of one's life. And as all the regular practitioners know, that meditation goes right through you. It just seeps right through one's consciousness, one's personality, say at the surface to the intermediate level, and it affects many areas of one's life. So, you know, people who are very, very, say, new to meditation may feel, well, you know, if I can get some peace of mind, I'd be more than content with that. But with the practice in itself, this very, very simple breath meditation, or even a little bit, even 1 or 2 minutes of loving kindness each day, or a little bit, 5 minutes of walking meditation, it's something which over time, as the weeks and months go by, will actually shape and polish one's personality in a number of ways. And anyone who meditates for at least 12 months, you know, you can easily see the good qualities which are developed in that particular person, regardless of gender or status or nationality. You know, meditation is it's like a mind-based science, a mind-based exercise where the meditation, you know, goes through you from, say, from the surface to the deeper levels, and it shapes and refines and polishes one's good qualities. And so in essence, though, regardless of what say you know, like rough edges or unpleasant aspects that one would like to alter in one's character, that over time that meditation will smooth and improve and increase the goodness of the person concerned. So from this very simple practice, which goes deep into one's personality over 5 years, 10 years, that the meditators who develop that kind of intuitive sensitivity, emotional intelligence, increased, it's almost like intuitive awareness, will be able to, in a sense, like recognize other people who like to practice as well, because as you're shaping and developing your own mind, you can see the characteristics in other people who practice as well. And for myself, especially with the monastics who have to at least do several hours a day, it's something that you can spot quite quickly in a person's personality, the effects of the practice, because it's something that we see in oneself, we see in other people, even things like loving kindness. If a person did loving kindness just for 1 minute a day, and they did that for 30 days, you would actually, to me, it would be quite obvious. It's something I would see, and I would be able to spot, without difficulty, even within 60 seconds, a minute and a half. There's certain characteristics to loving kindness, compassion. They're very very what would you call, say, like broad meditations where they bring up so many good qualities. You can just do one particular, say, for example, if a person was interested in loving kindness, compassion, and they did that even just 1 or 2 minutes a day for 30 days, it's not just loving kindness and compassion which is developed, it's also patience and tolerance and emotional intelligence and sensitivity, intuition, and awareness, the ability to communicate, and there's many other things there, quality of connections with other people. You could probably identify a dozen different positive personality characteristics which just come from any of these very, very simple practices which actually work on the complexity of the human mind and the complexity of human emotion. So, when one looks at, I've heard people actually say this in business. You do have professionals who are employed by, say, business managers, by corporations and big business, and their people, their staff, their executives are trained in mindfulness training, meditation practice to increase the efficiency of their minds, their focus, the sharpness. Meditation does increase emotional intelligence. It does increase cerebral intelligence as well. It makes a person more aware, more sharp, increases the brain speed over time. Meditation does slow people down if they do it excessively. But when you do these little meditations on a daily basis, if you say, for example, you meditated in the evening, like the next morning, your mind would be quite much more sharp and alert than your normal state. Because you're looking at mindfulness training, you're looking at sharpening awareness, focus, sensory and peripheral awareness. And even for people they do mindfulness training, meditation training, even for the US military were doing this for jet fighter pilots, for different kinds of personnel in the military, even racing car drivers who need to be very sharp and alert and need to be able to react sort of quite quickly, make decisions and changes, with all the peripheral stuff which is going on within professional sports. So, even mindfulness training, meditation training is not just useful for people in general society, regardless of what that person's role is in the general community, but actually professional people, business people, sports people, anyone you can think of can benefit from meditation and mindfulness training. So let's see now. What I'll do, we'll do a couple of little, we'll do three practices. We'll do two small ones and then the Anapanasati on a reasonably sharp focus. So I'll do my some of my favorites which actually give good results and be quite, people can actually see, how they work. They can see the effects. So we'll start with the Say the Loving Kindness meditation. We only have to do it for 60 seconds. We don't have to do it for minutes on end, just so you can get like a feel for it, get some positive energy. And even that can be enough for people. Even 60 seconds, you do it in a very firm, consistent, sustained way. And so you can just feel, just generate a little bit of positive energy, a little bit of inner joy, and that energy will stay with you for 24 hours. People think, this little practice just for 60 seconds, there really can't be much in it whatsoever. But even myself, and I don't do much of it these days. I don't seem to have too much trouble with aversion. But you can feel it. It's something which has been quite clear to me. You can actually feel it for a full 24 hours. Just 1 minute, loving kindness for oneself. Generating whatever positive feelings are important to you. So the loving kindness meditation starts with may I. It starts with may I be happy and well and free from, say, suffering or difficulty. May I be joyful and positive and free from all sorrow. So it starts with may I be such and such. You can use any positive words which are important to you. You can use two or three positive words in any combination, and it's a matter of generating positive emotion towards oneself, and we'll do it slowly and continually, silently in the mind towards oneself for the next 60 seconds with no spaces in the word. You make it strong and firm, because this practice makes people just a little bit soft, but the way I do it, you make it firm and strong, so it's got some psychological strength behind it. You get the positivity, the energy, some joy, positive attitude. You like oneself, you like other people, but you need the psychological firmness, because you're dealing with all sorts of different people in everyday life. You don't want to be, say, really, really soft, really over soft and over sensitive. So we just do it just a little bit in a firm way. Make it strong. So choose the words which are important to you, starting with may I be such and such, and then just say it slowly, continually for the next 60 seconds. Okay, so now we're going to move on to the next meditation, number two. And what it involves, this particular meditation is very, very good for beginners to intermediates. And it's very, you can get a handle on this one very, very quickly. I've mentioned this previously, but I always bring this one up on a regular basis because it's so effective. And this is passed on to me by one of the previous disciples who's now living in the Philippines. He might possibly be tuned in tonight. His name is Scotty. He used to attend the Armidale group. But I thought it was a brilliant little meditation, and it's the reason why what it involves is sitting in a semi-dark or darkened room and closing one's eyes and actually focusing on that darkness, that black color in the mind. And you don't have to use incredible concentration or force. You're just gazing into the darkness, you're focusing on the darkness. And by drawing one's attention, one's mindfulness to the darkness, one draws one's attention away from the physical body and from thoughts and feelings. And the reason it works so well is because it's such a neutral object. Drawing one's attention away from, internal, external things. And what largely internal thoughts, feelings, and the physical body, you know, it's something that you're aware of within, say, like an internal field. Things like light, sound, you know, comes in from outside. But the principle remains the same. Very, very neutral object that you're focusing on, drawing one's attention away from, internal activity. And just by gazing into that darkness, focusing on that darkness, one can establish mindfulness and one can establish peace of mind that you could probably easily see within 5 to 10 minutes. It's one of the most brilliant meditations anyone's ever mentioned to me, and works very, very well no matter what level of practice you're at. And so what we'll do is we'll focus on that for, say, the next, so you can get a good feel for it. We'll focus on it for the next 10 minutes. And so just close your eyes and focus on that, on the darkness. Just gaze into the darkness. So just relax all the muscles around the eyes and relax all the muscles in the face, around the mouth, around the jaw. As you gaze into the darkness of the mind, just try to maintain a relaxed kind of attitude. We're not trying to do anything in particular. We're just gazing into the void in a way, this dark void inside the mind. Whatever thoughts arise in the mind, don't try to grab hold or push them away. Just allow them to be and allow them to settle over time. We'll move on to our third meditation, which is the Anapanasati, the breathing meditation. And what I would like you to do now is to use a reasonably sharp but comfortable focus. And if you can focus on the feelings around the mouth, and the reason why I focus on the feelings around the mouth is it's very clear, distinct. The focus is sharp enough to induce some peacefulness of mind, but it's not that sharp that you get muscular tension, that you can potentially get a headache and get pain between the eyes, this kind of thing. It's fairly focused, but it's physically comfortable. It's you're dropping it right down a little bit lower in the face. Sometimes people focus on the throat, but focus on the feelings around the mouth. And it's a very comfortable practice to do, when you're doing it for years on end. It works quite well. So for the remainder of the session, the last 15 minutes, just focus on the mouth section and you'll feel the breathing on the periphery. So as you develop this one, that the breathing will become more and more distinct, but you've got a good range and you've got a sharp enough range to induce peacefulness of mind. And we'll do this one for the next 15 minutes to the end of the session. As you continue with this meditation, try to keep the muscles in your face as relaxed as possible. So we're coming towards the end of the session. So just look at these three meditations and actually see what induces the most peacefulness for you, because people have different temperaments. And you can open your eyes when you're ready. Did anyone have any questions on the meditation at all?
Hey, John, if I may.
Yeah, please go ahead, Bob.
I find it terribly difficult to focus on a dark color or the void, as you say. I don't really see black when I try and meditate.
What you can do, you can just adjust your perception. You can, if you see light, if you see any white color, any light, sometimes you may be able to focus on that. I can look at darkness, I can look at light, but I find the darkness a bit more tranquilizing. But you can try it if you know, just see what you think. See what you think. Focusing on any light that you see in the mind.
My favorite color is blue. Can I use blue?
Yeah. Well. If you get that blue light coming up in the mind, if it's very broad and you can see it in your mind's eye, there's no reason why you can't focus on the blue.
Thank you,
Ajahn. No trouble, Bob. No trouble. Was there another person who needed to speak, or?
Just thank you for the last meditation. It was beautiful stillness on that one. So it may have taken me the two others to get to that still
a
point of mind, so that was really nice.
Yeah, I mean, with every single one of us, you know, because we have different faculties and different karma, you know, personal development, that each, with myself, I mean, I give people a handful of tools, but each individual over time has to see what actually works for them. You know, some people might like that darkness meditation, some people not at all, but You take the tool which works best for you, and then you try to refine that and improve the quality of that, you know, say as the weeks and the months go by, you know. Did you guys want me to talk about anything in particular, any subject at all, for maybe some time? Small time.
I don't know. Any subjects, ladies and gents? Everybody's quiet, John.
I'm glad they're so peaceful. So what did you guys want to do? Do you want to wrap it up, or should I give you another minute to think of something, or I'll let you guys decide what you want to do.
Okay.
Ajahn, do you have a particular topic you prefer to talk on?
Let's see, I'm trying to think, maybe a small subject might be, somebody brought up the point that, one of our disciples brought up the point that all religions are one, which is quite interesting. I mean, as Buddhist practitioners, you know, we do have some similarities with other faiths, like, you know, Christianity, Hinduism, Islam, we have some similar characteristics, but Buddhism is not the same as Christianity, Hinduism, and Islam. You know, Buddhism is really, it's a complete system. It's a full system which is aimed not at being reborn, say, in a heaven world, but actually going beyond karma and rebirth and bringing this process to an end. Some people may feel, you know, some people may feel from, say, major faiths of the world that heaven state, you know, like of Mahabrahma or Almighty God or Allah, is the final state. But it's not. You know, you can, the beings who live in these worlds live for such incredible periods of time. You know, say for example, at the most basic level, the most basic level. Oh, so with the Mahabrahma, just to be very very specific. The being in Christianity, Hinduism, Islam, they call Mahabrahma, he lives for the full expansion and contraction of the universe. So he sees the full evolution, de-evolution of the universe. And these beings live for such an incredible period of time, like an eon, that they believe they are immortal. Even devas who live in the high deva realms, they're living for millions and millions of years. You know, The full lifespan of the first Devaloka realm, the realm of the four great kings, the full lifespan from memory is 9.7 million years. And that's just the first world above the human world. You've got six of those Deva worlds. And as you move up, it just quadruples, you know, the time span. You're looking at hundreds of millions of years. And some of these beings, If their wisdom faculty is not strong, is not comprehensive, not deep, they can firmly believe that they're immortal as small gods, as high-ranking devas in these worlds, you know, which are below the Brahmaloka realms, that constitute the real gods of say the major religions of the world. But when you look at even things like, say, within Greek and Roman mythology, where you look at the pantheon of gods, which they have on the, you know, within the historical records and you know, other major cultures of the world, you know, you have these gods and celestial beings who live for incredible periods. That's something that we know of and that we understand within the cosmology of Buddhism. I mean, the human realm, we're lucky if we live for 100 years, but, like, you know, 100 years can be just a day and a night in one of these lower worlds of the Deva Loka fraternity. So, you know, like, by the time, you know, we've come and gone as human beings, it's just a day and a night in these higher worlds. So But the thing is, what I tend to point people towards, and I do this a lot, that even with the monastics, you know, because the monks and nuns practice is not a particularly easy life. You know, it's always testing you, and you know, you need a lot of patience and endurance, and in order to keep going, you know, to work with difficulties, problems. You know, you have the full range. You have your happiness, your suffering, like the lay practitioners, but one has to keep one's eye on the prize. So even when one leaves, even with the lay practitioners, both the monastic and the lay practitioners, you've got to keep your eye on the prize. So even if when we leave the human world, you make that firm determination that all the practice you've done, all the spiritual development practice, the study, the learning, the chanting, precepts, that you've kept for years on end. It's all aimed at bringing your rebirth, a conducive rebirth. You're aiming at essentially reconnecting with the path, and you know, you continue to walk the walk. And the vast majority of the lay disciples, the vast majority of the monastics will be reborn in those deva worlds at some point, if not immediately, not long after, because you can't obstruct or stop that kind of wholesome karma. Unless maybe if you murder someone, you do something incredibly horrendous. You attack and abuse someone, you take their life. That could be something that could block you for some time, but the years and years of wholesome development, you can't basically obstruct something like that, and that will bring you to rebirth in these Devaloka worlds, where you are not so personally affected by the problems and the difficulties and the health implications of this physical body. All of us who are middle aged, getting older, you know, we know exactly what this body is capable of. You know, it can whack you with a number of different disorders and problems and difficulties, especially moving into old age. Everyone who's 65 plus has got something happening. So the Devaloka realms, you've got this very refined ethereal body, celestial body, and which doesn't have anywhere near the problems of this more gross, dense physical body that we have as a human being. It's probably just magic by comparison. And we're living in these very happy, joyful, blissful worlds for incredible periods of time. And from my opinion, and I've got this firm conviction with this principle, that it's actually easier to get enlightened in these deva worlds, these happy worlds, where you're not troubled by this human body. You have a fine material body. You have a greater experience of happiness, freedom from pain, the pain and suffering that we see in the human world, incredible lifespans, and you've got the real potential that you put forth effort in these Devaloka realms. It doesn't matter which one you're reborn. It could be only 1,000 years, 1,000 deva years, 10,000 deva year lifespan. You put forth effort, and you know, if you can't break through to the Sotapanna level, the first level of enlightenment, with say like a 1,000 years of deva lifespan, I would be utterly amazed that the majority of people could not break through with an incredible lifespan like that if they're really putting, they really put forth effort. And if you break through in within 1,000 years, you should be able to go right through to the Anagami. The first stage is the most difficult time span to overcome. It's the most difficult. The attainment which takes the longest span of life, regardless of where the rebirth is. And when you move from the Sotapanna to the Sakadagami to the Anagami level, the third level, it's very, very fast by comparison. And you know, if you're really focused, you're really focused on bringing samsara to an end, I'm absolutely convinced of this. I can't prove this, but if you have enough knowledge of the suttas, this is something which is well within everyone's grasp, and they think to themselves, oh my God, it's just too hard, it's too difficult, I can't endure this and that. You just within your own mind, whether you're a monk or a nun or a lay disciple, that you have this firm conviction that you will break through, not like maybe, you keep walking the walk, you will break through almost 99.99%, because you're looking at incredible lifespans in these worlds. So what it comes down to is to skillful effort over time. You've got to have your 37 enlightenment factors there as your foundation, But the bottom line is skillful effort. You're moving in the right direction long enough. You know, you have enlightened disciples in these worlds who can guide you. If you're completely lost, or if you really don't know what you're doing, there are enlightened beings in those worlds who can guide you, instruct you, and teach you. And, you know, realistically, you could go right through easily to the Anagami level, and then you're spontaneously reborn into the pure abodes, the five levels for the Anagami level, Anagami attainment. And from there, you're completely finished. The path will completely come to an end. So any of us who think that it's too hard, it takes too long, you know, this and that, realistically, next life, you could wrap it up in a major, major way. It'd be in a very, very safe and secure position as far as samsara goes, and bring the whole business to an end. And that's the kind of mentality that I've got. I'm absolutely convinced in my next life that I will easily, without great, you know, without incredible effort or hardship, you know, that I will break through to the Sotapanna level. I'm absolutely convinced of this. I can't explain, you know, it's just something, because I've been doing this Anicca Sanya principle, the perception of Anicca. I do this several thousand times a day. And this is not to be underestimated, because it does things to you. It gives you a level of conviction, faith, determination. You know, it gives you almost like, you know, that like nothing will stop you. It's this kind of thing develops, you know, after a year, 2 years, and you just can't see the point in doing anything else. And so, you know, that's exactly what the Buddha recommended. All the lay disciples, I would do this little mantra every 60 seconds, every minute of the day, all day and night, all your waking hours. Like, feelings are changeable, consciousness, perception, could be anything, dynamics, the weather, absolutely anything is changeable in nature. Do it one time, every 60 seconds, do it all your waking hours, and you can accelerate the speed of your practice quite significantly with this very, very light samadhi, which is sustained for at least 18 hours per day. So I'll get back to you guys, and you can give me any comments on this one before we finish up. Are there any comments, any questions whatsoever from the group?
Okay, we'll
wrap it up there, Pimba, and we'll move back to you, and you can wrap up with the finishing conclusions.
Yeah. Okay, thank you, John. Thanks very much for coming in today, and that second one about focusing in the dark, so I'm sort of at a different end of the spectrum from Bob. So that one I find quite sort of easy to go into that calming state when we are just focusing on the void. So, and that was good. So thank you.
Thank you, Rajan.
Thank you kindly, guys.
Thank you, Ajahn.
And we'll catch up with you later. Yeah. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye. Peace.